Hello and welcome to another episode of the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host, Anfahan, and once again today we've decided to be a platform for quite a controversial opinion. Paul Coleridge is a former High Court judge and founder of the Marriage Foundation, which advocates for long-lasting, stable relationships within marriage. He recently penned an article for The Telegraph in which he half-jokingly suggested that Brexit might result in an improvement of family stability and marriage rates. As you can imagine, this created a storm of backlash online, so we thought we'd bring him on to elaborate on his point and share why exactly he believes marriages are worth protecting in the first place. As always, do your own research, make up your own mind, and we look forward to hopefully having some lively discussions in the comments section. To hear more Brexit-related insights from a whole host of interesting people, subscribe to us wherever you're listening to this podcast, or find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast.
Paul, great to have you on the show.
Very pleased to be with you.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us. Now, Paul, we saw an article in The Telegraph which headline was Brexit's an opportunity to reverse the tragic decline of marriage, which was a piece that you wrote, and you started with lampooning a few of the wild predictions of the outcome of Brexit.
Yes.
You do make the point it's not an exact science. So I just wanted to ask you what the article was about.
Yes.
And I know when we spoke earlier, you said, you know, it was slightly tongue-in-cheek as well.
Yes.
So please, fire away.
Well, we were all berated, were we not, in the run-up to the referendum with a battery of different predictions from every possible side, depending upon the identity of the person making the predictions and the particular stance they took in the debate. Many of the predictions were ludicrous. Many of the predictions, and a great many of the predictions, have already turned out to be entirely wrong. And it occurred to me that the pundits so often put themselves forward, experts so often put themselves forward as being authorities for particular predictions and propositions. And my experience sitting in court is that the experts are very, very often wrong. And one needs to be extremely wary of experts. Now, I'm not an expert on Brexit, but I am an expert, if I'm an expert on anything, on families and family breakdown and the general decline in the security of family life in this country in the last 30 years, because I've been intimately involved in it, both as a barrister and as a judge. And I got to thinking that this Brexit debate is not about money, ultimately. It's not ultimately about... People have not made a decision, in my opinion, particularly fixated by the financial advantages or disadvantages. Those who have voted to leave, and I suppose I should declare an interest in that I have looked, I think, at the much bigger picture and the general effect on the country's psychology, if you like, of involvement in the European Union. And I have discussed this with a number of other people, and the conclusion I've come to, rightly or wrongly, is that this may represent a wholesale reevaluation of our place in the world, our ability to stand on our own two feet, and I think that will be very positive, and will have an effect on the way people behave in their private lives. That's the essence of what I'm saying. Now, do I have any deep insight into these things? No, only that I've observed human beings in court over 40 years, so I think I'm as well placed as anybody. I think that there is a deep concern in the general public about the state of family breakdown in this country, and a very deep concern to do something about it. And I think it, in the end, it tracks back to all those values like self-confidence, self-assuredness, standing on one's own feet, taking responsibilities for one's own actions, and all that kind of thing. And I think it is part and parcel of the positive side of the Brexit debate. So I am optimistic in thinking that the slightly self-centered way in which we have conducted ourselves since we have been part of this great European experiment, and let me say straight away, I'm not hysterically against Europe. I just think it's completely got out of hand and it's far too big. The way in which we have allowed the sort of national psyche to be affected, I think, has had a detrimental effect on that part of our private lives as well.
So,
a rather long answer, I'm afraid.
No, fine. I mean, I think you're kind of saying there that the short, sharp shock effect that Brexit will bring will make us take look, sit up and take some responsibility, perhaps for actions.
Yes, I think it is. You know, this is all about the law of unintended consequences, and this certainly isn't one of the intended consequences of Brexit. But I think Brexit is going to have a great many spin-offs, which we are not yet able to predict. And I think many of them, I think most of them will be positive. There may be, of course, there may be economic disadvantages. But I think from the point of view of the psychological health of the nation, it will be a good thing.
Do you, as chairman and founder of the Marriage Foundation, do you think that family breakdown is inextricably linked to marriage?
Yes. It is in this sense that the declining rates of marriage, and in fact they are not declining anymore at the moment. There has been a fall off, but in the last two or three years there's been a steadying of the statistics. But the real mischief has been the huge increase in informal cohabitation between couples in the last, well, since about the late 1980s, mid 1980s, there's been a huge increase. I mean, absolutely dramatic increase in the numbers, quite unlike anything in previous decades, in the rate at which people live together without forming any legal bond. And almost exactly mirroring that increase has been the increase in family breakdown. And the simple fact is that although only 20% of the population in the end cohabit in this informal way, they produce 50% of the family breakdown. So they are about, I mean, the research we have done, and not only us, but many other organizations, both here and abroad, show that informal, unstructured relationships break down at about three times the rate.
So if we're then assuming that this might get better as a result of Brexit, does that then, on the reverse, imply that Europe was in part to blame for this breakdown in families and marriages?
I mean, I wouldn't want to make a link quite as clearly as that. I think, as I say, it's part of a much, much deeper, broader malaise. The problem with Europe has been that it's got so vast and so impersonal that I think it does affect the way in which we think about our place in the world, both as individuals and as a country. And I don't think big is good. When it gets as big as this, I mean, the USSR broke up. Why? Because it was so big and unmanageable. Scotland wants to go its own separate ways because, and the regions want to go their own separate ways because they prefer the ability to be responsible for their own destinies. And I think that feeds into the mindset of individuals and families. And I think that there will be a re-evaluation by people of their responsibilities towards their nearest and dearest and their immediate families, and I think there will be less inclination to throw in the towel if things get difficult, because I think, you know, it's going to be quite tough in many ways if and when Brexit happens, but I don't think tough is always bad. I think it's very often good. It sharpens people up, you know. I mean, to make the old analogy, you know, people were at their happiest, many of them, during the Second World War. I mean, I wasn't around, but I mean, you know, people talk rosily about the difficulties, but also about the sense of community and the sense of cohesion that existed in society. And I think that we will have a little bit of that spirit come back into the country, and I think that will also help family cohesion.
Thanks, Paul. When we spoke earlier, you mentioned that the piece actually caused quite a storm.
Yeah.
Did that surprise you, and why do you think it was so emotive?
Well, it caused a storm because, of course, everybody who disagrees with me in the way in which I voted thinks, you know, here's another madman who should be put down and shouldn't be allowed to speak. But
does that include your wife, Paul?
No, my wife is even more vehemently in favour of leaving than I am. I took a great deal more time to make up my mind. She was very clear from much earlier on. And I think it. Well, I mean, as I said, I don't pretend that I'm more of a soothsayer than some of these other people who expressed their opinions, but I think that I'm at least as good as some of them. Or should I say less likely to be as bad?
Yeah, I was doing a little research for this chat. I was having a look at the countries with the highest divorce rates in the world, and Belgium came out top, followed by Portugal, Hungary, the Czech, Spain and Luxembourg.
Right.
In Europe, the only countries that seem to be doing, I suppose, well, in inverted quotes, for marriage were Ireland and Italy, which I guess is potentially linked to the Catholic influence a little.
It may be. Countries are at different stages of development. I mean, we had an American researcher over here a couple of weeks ago during Marriage Week, who and their Family Policy Institute in America has produced a fantastic piece of work about entitled the cohabitation go round, cohabitation and family instability across the globe, and it's the most detailed piece of work which they've carried out over many years, and it shows that England is right way up at the top of the league, not necessarily at the very top, but way at the top of the league, as are many of the other European countries, but we're worse than many. And
that's in terms of breakdown of family values.
Yeah, breakdown of family life. Yes,
right.
The raw message is that marriage adds an enormous stabilizing factor in people's lives. So that if you get married today in this country, the probability is that you will remain married for life. It's hard to believe that, but that is the probability. If you do not get married and you have children in this country, the overwhelming likelihood, much more than a probability, in other words, the virtual certainty, statistically speaking, is that you will not be living with your... Both parents will not be living with their children by the time they're 15. So, I mean, there's what they call a huge stability factor around marriage, and so we think it's very, very important for everybody to understand this. And so when people say there's no difference, it's just a piece of paper, they couldn't be further from the truth.
As a child of separation myself, I'm quite curious whether you then think that a sort of nuclear family with a married couple at the top is somehow superior to sort of any other family unit which might involve a single parent. So
right.
Am I, as the child of separated parents, somehow
right.
less well off or anything?
It's got nothing whatever to do with parenting skills. It's got nothing to do with the fact that people who are married in some magical way make better parents. It's quite simply the fact that the single most important factor in a child's development, if you look at the whole range of different factors, the single most important factor in their overall development is whether or not they are in a stable family relationship. And if they are, again, statistically, and we can all talk anecdotes. I mean, I live with anecdotes all the time I was in the family courts. But statistically, the children from stable two-parent families do best in the end overall. Are there others who do well? Of course there are. I mean, I have friends who aren't married and make a perfectly good fist of it and bring their children up every bit as well as the married. So, I mean, I'm not for one moment saying it's a black and white solution. All I'm saying is that the data is clear that, statistically speaking, you're much more likely to stay together if you're married. And statistically speaking, stable families produce children who do better overall in the end. And I'm very interested to hear about your own experience, but it wouldn't in any way undermine the data. You could use it's a significant portion of people who are unmarried who do perfectly well.
Sorry, could you just give me an indication of what these statistics are that you're talking about? So where did you find them, just so we can check
Well,
them?
Let's start. The main statistic, so far as this country is concerned, is that by children's mid-teens, 50% of the children in this country are no longer living with both their birth parents, right? So that's the first worrying statistic. And that is the same in the States. It's the same in other countries as well. So it's not confined to this country. But 50%, as I say, are already in a relation, are being brought up in some kind of family arrangement which is not one involving both their birth parents, right? And it could be a single parent, it could be a step parent arrangement, etc. It could be any number of different family arrangements these days. But the short fact is that if you take the 50% who are living with both their birth parents, 96% of them at that stage are because the couple are married. In other words, there's a very, very small number of people who don't get married who remain with their children throughout. They do. It does happen, but it's unusual.
Okay, so that's evidence that sort of people who are married are more likely to stay together, right? But what's
correct?
The evidence suggesting that children in families that do stay together end up being better off than those who aren't?
Well, masses of studies is all I can say. I mean, I haven't got them absolutely at my fingertips now, but all I can tell you is this is no longer controversial stuff. I mean, it used to be 10 years ago, if you made this kind of assertion, people would say, well, how do you say that? Mm-hmm. But in fact, now there are numerous studies. I mean, I could send you a copy of this this American study I've just been talking to you about, and that has got a lot of the studies in it, and refers to this. And as I say, hardly only does so briefly, because it assumes that as a fact of life now, as I say, it's no longer controversial. I mean, certain of the things we talk about are still at a fairly embryonic stage, but that is not regarded as a controversial statement anymore.
Paul, are there some changes that you'd like to see in the welfare state?
I'm not a great fan for providing enormous financial incentives to people in order to get them to live in a particular way. But the fact of the matter is, at the moment, at the present time, the incentive on people not to live together is measured in thousands. The incentive on people to marry and stay together is measured in a very few hundred. As you know, the Conservative government eventually introduced this pitiful tax allowance about 3 or 4 years ago with under George Osborne. So small was it that actually almost no one took it up. And that, we think, is not a good thing. It's all about messaging rather than about money. And it does not give sufficient significance to the increase in family stability and therefore the decrease in the take-up of resources that stable families bring. On the other side of the coin, the couple penalty, as it's called, runs to thousands. In other words, if you are living in a relationship which is not a cohabiting relationship, you do better than if you are living in a stable cohabiting relationship under the current financial social payment system.
So,
the answer is yes. We think there are many imaginative changes that could be made, which we spend a lot of time talking to governments about. But of course, it's all in the end constrained by public expenditure. But then, family breakdown is incredibly expensive.
Mm. Are you more optimistic under Theresa May's watch?
I think it's the jury's still out, don't you? I think she's got off to a pretty good start. I'm fairly pleased with her efforts to date, and I think she's played a pretty clever hand so far as the Brexit side of life is concerned.
Mm. And just finally, Paul, maybe on a slightly lighter note, and thanks ever so much for your time today. You made a prediction in your piece about how Brexit could be good for the institution of marriage. You got any more Brexit predictions you'd like to make?
I think I've stirred enough pots. No, not immediately. I think that I think it will have a lot of good benefits so far as the way people run their lives are concerned. But I mean, I'm not going to say anything more than I've said at the moment. As I said, that was pretty far-reaching, that it would help marriage.
What was the worst insult you had back after that piece?
Oh, I mean, that I was completely deluded and or dangerously deluded, I think, and making all sorts of connections which weren't justified. And I mean, I've never suggested this is science. This is not about science. This is much more about artistic prediction, about the way. Well, it's about human behaviour, which I think is always terribly unpredictable.
Does religion play a part for you personally?
What in the marriage debate?
Yes.
No, not really. I'm much more persuaded by the science, by the science and the research, which I now think gets better and better by the year.
Paul, thanks ever so much for being our guest on the Brexit podcast.
Not at all. Anytime.
As always, thanks for listening. And if you enjoy the show, please subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Paul, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin MacLeod.